Hey boys and girls, welcome to the Neo Windcast News Edition for March 1st, 2007. I'm the usual host, Chris Vendemio. You know me as BangBang023. Joining me, as always, my buddies and yours, Todd Tanner, known as Locke, and Rob Wright, known as Rob. How's it going, guys?
I still like cheese.
Cheese for the win.
Yes, and Todd says still like cheese because this is probably our fifth attempt at an intro. It's been one of those nights. We're going to jump in, though, to our first topic of a rather wide variety of topics, and we're going to start talking about BitTorrent. In the past, BitTorrent has been a highly controversial network in which people would share files, much like you would on LimeWire or back in the days on Napster, and, you know, there's movies available, games available, all, of course, illegal. However, there are some legal purposes. Linux, which is an alternative operating system to Windows, is often distributed via BitTorrent because it lowers the cost of distribution for the creator of the Linux distribution. However, Brad Cohen, the creator of BitTorrent, has teamed up with some movie studios and has created the BitTorrent Entertainment Network. He's actually on board with 20th Century Fox, Lionsgate, MTV Networks, Paramount Pictures, Warner Brothers, and MGM. They offer movies, television shows, and music videos for download. And I heard there's some game demos available right now also. As far as pricing goes, it's a little bit different than the iTunes Music Store that we've come to know and, well, love or hate, depending on who you are. While they do offer a much wider selection than the iTunes Video Store does as far as movie studios go, the pricing is a bit different. First of all, you don't own any of the movies you download. They're movie rentals, and they're priced between $3 to $4, depending on the title, you know, its age, its popularity, and such. And there's only about 40 hours of high-definition content right now, so most of the downloads are still going to be in standard definition, which is definitely a downfall if you have a high-resolution monitor or if you have a media center PC and you're trying to pump some of this stuff, some of these downloads to your new high-definition TV. But they plan on expanding that in the future. TV shows and music videos, they're priced pretty evenly with the iTunes Video Store. They're $1.99 each. That's on a two-own basis, so you don't rent those like you do the movies. And everything is, well, of course, wrapped in DRM, in this case, Microsoft's Windows Media Digital Rights Management. It's definitely an interesting network. It's one that's been highly anticipated by many in the industry who want to see if BitTorrent, which has been, like I said, highly controversial for its illegal uses, can be converted over to a legal network without necessarily destroying the other uses of it, such as those Linux distributions and the like. However, though, it hasn't been a easygoing launch, we'll say. Some reports on sites such as Engadget report that up to 50% of the purchases were rendered useless because, well, the DRM failed. The DRM is, of course, as we discussed last week, digital rights management, and it prevents you from copying and such. Well, if it prevents you from watching the player after you legally purchased it, that's definitely going to be an issue. Rob, I'm going to start with you, though. There's no specific question I want to ask you, but overall, what do you think of the BitTorrent Entertainment Network, and, you know, do you see it, well, like I always ask, do you see it failing or succeeding in the future?
Myself, I think, first of all, I'm really pleased to see BitTorrent actually coming out into a more kind of legal sphere, because when we do see it on, for example, Linux distributions, and, you know, certainly on Neowin, we've got it for distributing the auto-patcher software, which is an amazing piece of software that has been developed on Neowin. It's a great protocol, it really is great, and it's a wonderful method of distributing content where it really shares the cost of of the distribution cost, and I think that's something which is really something to be celebrated, and I think it's great that they've managed to do this. First of all, I think it's incredible that they've managed to get so many studios on board, and I kind of read this story a little bit before and in the preceding months before this announcement actually came out that they'd launched, but there really wasn't that much in terms of fanfare, and it just sort of launched, and they did a very good job behind the scenes of getting the studios involved. So first of all, you know, I think that's really good. I've got a bit of an issue though. Firstly, okay, let's put digital rights management aside. When I rent a movie from the movie store, let's say just around the corner from my house, I don't have to have... I don't sign it for a contract and have to have a shift working at the video store. It's, you know, it's not part of the contract. Whereas in BitTorrent, your internet connection is therefore used to help share the cost of distributing this content. So you're both paying for the content and you're using your own bandwidth to distribute it to others. And I'm just thinking, well, I don't know if that's really good value for money, because I didn't try and download this movie. I didn't pay for this movie because I wanted to let other people download using my hard-earned bandwidth. I downloaded it because I wanted to watch it. I just think, well, yeah, BitTorrent's a wonderful protocol, but I don't know whether it works in this commercial sphere.
Yeah, I'd have to agree right off the bat with Rob on that one. For the most part, I'm quite satisfied with the BET service here. It's fairly well put together from what I looked at earlier. It's got some nice stuff offered. Overall, the design is nice. From what I understand, I haven't done any, I haven't signed up or anything to try it, but they have some pretty fat pipes for the seeds on there, so you're pretty much guaranteed to have a pretty decent time downloading, your movie or your TV show or whatever. However, the DRM is an issue, a big issue. I think the game section is another issue that a lot of people have been complaining about. That it lists them as all free pretty much, but they're not. They're all trial versions from some company that offers these games by trialware, and you're limited to like 30 minutes of use or 60 minutes of use or some other stuff like that. I'm not quite sure what the time limit is, but they're not free. Let's put it that way. You guys that already commented that you wanted to download Deus Ex, you ain't going to download for free. Let's put it that way. Another issue I have is, not so much, whether it's good or bad for the BitTorrent community, but in general, when you say, oh, it's BitTorrent, well, unfortunately, the BitTorrent community is not just BitTorrent.com. There's, like, one torrent client for every day of the week, plus another 6,000. There's a billion one private torrent tracker sites. There's public tracker sites. There's tons of torrent sites. BitTorrent.com is the guy that did it, is the guy that originally did the protocol for BitTorrent. He created BitTorrent, all that good stuff. But he is not BitTorrent. BitTorrent has gone way far and above what he has done. UTorrent, for example, BitComet, which I know a lot of people don't care for anymore, but they all did amazing stuff with the protocol, added new features, whatever. And I just think that it's going to fracture the BitTorrent community as a whole. I think, in general, most of the BitTorrent community is fairly well knowledgeable when it comes to these things, and they don't want to have to download DRM-infested garbage and spend $4 on something that you can only watch, once or twice, when, like Rob said, you can go to the store down the street and rent it for a week or, however long. Or, rent games from Gamefly and take a month and play your game for a month and return it. I don't see it flying very long unless they change their pricing structure and their fair use stuff.
See, Rob, you actually bring up a good point, one that I was going to bring up myself, and that's the fact that, well, when you're downloading something through the BitTorrent Entertainment Network, you're also asked to upload the files to share the parts you already have with other people who are purchasing the file. So basically, you're using your bandwidth to share this file among your peers, and you're not making much out of that. In the case of my internet service provider, I know that if they feel you've been uploading too much, they don't really give any numerical definitions as far as what's too much, but generally speaking, if you upload for extended periods of time or max out your upload too often, they will cap you, and they'll bump you down from 15 megabits a second all the way down to 1 megabit a second for your download, and something like 12k a second for your upload, which is terrible. Do you think that this is going to be an issue going forward, Rob, where more and more people are going to look at this and say, well, I'm giving you my money, why do I also have to give you my bandwidth? And do you think that maybe some people, especially people who may not pay attention to the settings and such, may wind up getting burned by this because of the fact that, well, their ISPs aren't too keen on too much bandwidth being dedicated to uploads?
I think that's an inevitability, and it's quite scary, really, because as I said before, it's when you're purchasing a video game or you're renting it, you don't expect to have to give something back in return. You've already paid for it, and I just don't see that this model of somehow relying on the altruism of the community to support the network. I just don't think it really works. It's not sustainable because, as you say, there are some ISPs out there who are very, very strict about capping them. I know in Canada, for example, Rogers is very strict about throttling BitTorrent connections, and that's regardless of whether they're legal or not. But because the BitTorrent protocol accounts for ridiculous amounts of traffic on the internet nowadays, I don't know the actual figures, but it's something that would be worth looking up. Rogers has started throttling those connections, and if that's going to stop people from downloading the legal content, then actually the ramifications of this system are that it's not actually going to be very sustainable in the long term. I don't know, Todd, what do you see in this? Did you think that this will actually be a long-term solution, or do you think that some of these issues with the ISPs are actually going to overcome it?
I think it could be a long-term thing. I think, like I said, the DRM and all the other stuff needs to be fixed. The bandwidth issue, I don't know, that's hard to say. I think what they should set up, and they may have it, or maybe doing it down the road, is certainly have a page on their website that before you download something or purchase whatever or rent, whatever you want to call it, on their site, to have some sort of page set up for people that don't know these things, that they specifically are told that while you're downloading, you are also uploading, and you have to watch your bandwidth and all this other stuff. And of course, let's also get into the whole thing where, wait a second, I'm downloading, but I'm also sharing with everyone else. How come I'm paying more than other, video and other rental services online? I'm paying either at or more than what they offer price-wise, but I'm using my bandwidth. How come I'm not getting partially discounted prices here or lower prices?
Well, maybe that's a model then. Maybe there should be some discounts for those that do upload more. Maybe if you are very lucky to be on an ISP that doesn't really care so much for that, then maybe you should be compensated for that and get either free rental or discounted rentals. I don't know. Maybe that's a more sustainable solution. We'll have to see.
Man, see, when I look at this, honestly, I see it as another gimmick. I think while the BitTorrent name may ring true in the geek community, we're all part of that community. We're all full of geeks there. But I don't think the name itself, for marketing's sake, really has a place in common society as far as the people going on iTunes to download the latest Lost episode to their iPod and the like. So it's definitely going to be an uphill climb, to say the least. And I really don't think this network is going to survive, or at least succeed to the way that Brad and the movie studios wish it would. There seems to be too much responsibility placed on the end user to not only pay, but then give bandwidth. It just doesn't seem like it's going to work in the long run for me. I don't know. It'll be fun to watch, but right now with the DRM issues, I wouldn't even recommend anyone try buying something from the store. So, good luck to them, but I really don't see it lasting. We're going to move, though, from BitTorrent to another sector of the web that we all use. Opera. It's another web browser. You have Internet Explorer, you have Firefox, which I love, by the way, and you have Opera, which has been the underdog since day one. But it's one of those browsers that is chock full of features, tends to be very, very fast as far as downloading pages and just responsiveness as soon as you run the program and the like. And when they introduced a new program, new feature today that they promoted as being the never seen in a desktop browser before. And they call it Speed Dial. Basically, what they realize is that in the browser, in these browsers such as Opera, Firefox, Internet Explorer 7, you have tabs. And most of the time, when people opened a new tab, it was to go to a site that they visit often. For instance, I would either go into Neowin, Engadget, MySpace, my own personal website, maybe a friend's blog. We basically have about 5 or 6 sites, as they say, that you visit very often. So what they did was, when you open a new tab, instead of having a blank page, they allow you to have your favorite sites listed there, where you can easily click a picture snapshot of your favorite site, and it would automatically bring you to that site, so you wouldn't have to click the bookmarks menu, go down to the folder the site is in, look through the list over there, and find the site, click on the link. You just open a new tab, there's the 9 most common sites you visit, click on the one you want, and bada bing, you're at the site. However, I don't exactly see this as being groundbreaking by any means. It just seems like another play on bookmarks, if you will. What do you guys think, starting with Todd, of this feature? It's useful, yes, but is it really what I guess these developers had hyped it up to be?
Well, you know, I don't want to, you know, bash anyone for using Opera. I mean, I use it, actually been using it quite a lot lately, but, you know, I don't know if it's the Opera guys or the Opera fanboys or whoever, but have these guys ever seen, like, you know, the start pages, the RSS start pages, or the Ajax start pages, or NetVibes, or any of these pages that have customs, you know, things that you can set up that when you open your browser window, it comes to a page with all your whatever links you want, literally, you know, either favorites or bookmarks or, you know, just URLs or even pictures from Flickr or, you know, whatever photo sharing site you use. And you could link them all up and make pages like that. I don't see it being all that groundbreaking. It's certainly convenient, especially for Opera, because I can't stand their bookmark system. You know, you can't scroll. You got to have that stupid cascading menu garbage, which I hate. So for that, it's certainly convenient. I do not see it as groundbreaking. Certainly, Firefox and IE7 both have something similar, so to speak. Not out of the box, of course, but you know you can do it. I do not see it as groundbreaking. I don't think that, you know, devs always do that. They always, oh, it's the best thing ever. It's never been seen before, and blah, blah, blah. Well, the only reason why it's never been seen before is that no one's ever called it Speed Dial before. That's pretty much what my thing is on it.
I agree that there's a certain amount of marketing going into this, and it really is. You know, they wanted to release a very nice press release, and they've got their media publicity from it, and we're talking about it. But I do like the feature. I do think it's a neat implementation. I think it's done with a bit of style, and I think they've paid attention to the user interface, and I think they've done it well. Yes, maybe they're not the first to do it, and maybe, you know, there's plugins that can do it on the more mainstream browsers, but at the same time, I think, hey, you know, giving credit where it's due, it works very nicely. I've had a play, and I do believe that it's a good feature, and I think a lot of people will find it very useful. What I do like is that you're not just limited to your favorites or bookmarks, as they're called in other browsers, that you've put in manually. It actually looks at your history, and it can see what the, let's say, the 10 most commonly visited sites are. And say, well, maybe there's a privacy issue there. Maybe you don't want the 10 most visited sites there. But as a feature, I think it's quite neat that you're not just limited to those that you've manually put in, but it's seeing your browsing patterns, and it's therefore trying to mold the user experience of the browser around the way that you actually browse. So I like it, and I'd like to see, and I expect it will be copied very quickly by the other browser manufacturers.
Yeah, I expect an extension for Firefox to be released within 30 minutes from now, because people like that. But, you know, Rob, you bring a point how it looks at your browsing history and all to try to propagate this page with the 9 most visited sites. And do you think that maybe that's the way sites are, browsers are going to have to go as far as enhancing usability, where instead of just chucking on feature after feature after feature, where they're actually going to be analyzing each user's habits now and trying to mold the browser around those habits, sort of like the context ribbons do in Office 2007?
I think this is a paradigm shift of the way that people are using their computers, and it's the way developers are writing applications now. There's this greater emphasis placed upon personalization and the experience of the user, and I actually see it as a very positive thing. We're getting more. I mean, in the first days of the web, there was no geo-targeting of ads. There was none of that. Now, you know, advertisements on web pages, whether you like them or not, they're more likely to be relevant to you because of the way that it looks at the way you're browsing and where you are in the world and all the rest of it. So I like that. You know, for example, if I'm on Neowin, then maybe I'll see. If I'm browsing on my Mac, then more often than not, I'll see an advertisement for Mac RAM that I can buy, whereas obviously I wouldn't get that if I was running on a PC. So there's this whole issue of just generally moulding the experience around the user. I see it as a positive thing, but there are people out there that prefer the kind of more passive use of the technology rather than being actively engaged in it. I guess it's really a personal decision about whether you want to be more immersed in the experience or whether you're happy to just kind of do it from your own standpoint and not want to try and get too involved. personally, as I say, I'm quite happy for it to mould around my experience, as long as it is kept within the browser and not transmitted for market research purposes. And there's a big, big concern there. But no, I think it's a positive step, and I don't see it as an issue.
Yeah, see, I'm going to be thinking a little large scale on this, but I actually think it's a very cool step towards something that I would love to see. Now, if this would take... This would never happen. It would take every player in the game accepting this and the like. But basically, where every page you went to, since you know you have all the header information, they could be, the standards would be set, and there's different categories a site could fit into, and that category could be picked up by the computer, by the browser, and if you visit that site enough, maybe an auto bookmark is created, or it's organized a little more, so you're not limited to 9 sites on the screen, where you can have folders saying, these are the technology sites you visited, these are the gaming sites you visited, and such. You know, it's very large scale, I'm making it sound much simpler than it would in reality be, but I like the idea of the software not requiring me to hold its hand as we walk along every single step. You know, it's where it can look at me, see what I'm doing, and as you said, as long as it's not sharing it for market research, you know, molding itself around my needs automatically without me having to step in every step of the way and really force my hand in order to get it to work the way I want. I don't know. It would be interesting. You know, Todd, you said you use Opera. Have you used this feature at all yet? I know people have said it's been very similar to the Opera Wii browser. The Nintendo Wii has a version of Opera on it that has a feature very similar to this. And it's also, the developers have admitted it's very similar to the version of Opera for cell phones. But have you used this feature yet? Do you like it? Do you dislike it?
No, actually, I didn't even know it was out yet. This is the first I learned of it. I knew that they were touting something revolutionary. I just haven't... I didn't know it was out yet, so I haven't tried it.
Oh, okay, well, now's your chance, everyone out there. Get on it, download Opera, give it a whirl. Tell us what you think about it. I'd be really curious to know how it really falls into play with everyone's daily usage. Does it work for you? Does it work against you? It'd be interesting. No, I'm really interested in this kind of material where software tries to mold itself around you. We're going to depart from the browser world, and we're going to step into a world, well, where everyone who's ever touched a computer probably hates it whether they know it or not. And that's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. This is the law that was passed right around 2000, 2001, I believe. Well, that basically makes it illegal to do anything with any form of media. I'll be a little less brash and say this is the act that makes it illegal to copy DVDs, makes it illegal to, well, technically illegal to rip CDs to your computer to store them as MP3s, basically makes it illegal to do anything with the media you buy that other than listen to it or watch it. Simple as that. Well, some U.S. senators have, representatives of Congress have stepped up. One is a Democrat from Virginia, Rick Boucher, I believe his name is, and one's a Republican from California, John, and I swear this is his real last name, Doolittle. They've stepped up and they propose an amendment to this act that would, well, create some exemptions, Section 1201 exemptions. BetaNews.com has gone over the rather long-winded report and has summarized the exemptions. I'm going to go over them quickly for you. First of all, teachers would be able to make copies of audiovisual works for teaching purposes and may circumvent copy protection. Individuals can circumvent any technology that would force them to watch commercials when you're using a TiVo or a cable company's DVR system. They're starting to implement technology where you're forced to watch commercials, or at least as you're fast-forwarding through the actual commercials, watch a stationary ad on the screen, that it would now be legal to circumvent those for your own personal use. Circumventing protection to make personal copies, individual copies of files that you've downloaded, such as from the iTunes video store or from the BitTorrent Entertainment Network, it'd be legal to circumvent the DRM on that to make personal copies to transfer over your home network but not over the internet. You can defeat copy protection if your objective is to seek out a work in the public domain. If you're a reporter or researcher, you can circumvent copy protection for the sake of research or journalism. And, well, basically you can circumvent copy protection to make backup copies of any downloaded material or physically owned media. So basically what this bill would do is give you some rights back. You can actually do something with the media you buy. Now, let's be realistic here. I rip my CDs to MP3 as soon as I buy them. I'm sure there are people out there who back up their movie DVDs because, well, just in case some kid gets them and scratches them or your DVD player decides it's going to mar the hell out of it, you have a backup. But that's been illegal till now. The FBI is not going to come knocking on your door to say, hey, cut that out. But it's technically illegal, and this act, though it's in its infancy and, you know, it's not guaranteed to even get far, it would give you some power back to legally protect your investments. What do you guys think of this? Todd, I'll start with you. First of all, do you think this is going to hold any water once it actually reaches a vote and such like that? Or do you think lobbyists are just going to kill it before it ever has a chance? And second of all, do you think this is a small step towards something bigger? Or do you think this is really as far as the user rights are going to extend?
I think once the RIAA and the MPAA and all the lobby groups get a hold of it, it's going to be nuked real fast. I doubt very much this will ever pass in Congress. It's so unlikely that it's not even funny, because these, you know, lobby groups, the RIAA and MPAA and all these guys, so much money involved, they would never allow it to happen. That's number one. And you know, I don't know if it's a bigger movement for user rights. I would hope it is. I think it's really, really, really cool that these senators or congressmen or representatives or whatever they are. I think it's really good that they're doing this. I think it's a good step. You know, just that his last name is a little weird doesn't mean he's not a cool guy and can't, you know, put forward a good bill for this. The fact that he's a Republican is a different story, but let's not get into that. You know, the DMCA was a horrible thing to be passed. I really think it was one of the worst laws that were ever passed in this country. The fact that they're going to be doing, if this ever gets passed, this 1201 exemption thing, or whatever they're calling it, if it gets passed or added or anything and remotely resembles what they're pushing right now, it'll be really good for this country. I don't know if it's going to, you know, lead into something bigger. I hope so. But, you know, the last couple of years or so, I would never expect it to pass, and if it did, it would never resemble what they have now, let's put it that way.
When I was reading the story, I did somewhat hear sort of angels high in heaven sort of singing. It was beautiful to read, but it's just so... It's pie in the sky, it's not real. It's the reasons why the Digital Millennium Copyright Act came about was because of all the lobby groups saying, no, we can't let people do this because they'll only use it for bad purposes. And it's, you know, it's assuming that people are going to be using their rights and to try and get around and steal music and all the rest of it, software and DVDs. Yeah, this is great. It's a great proposal. I agree with Todd that actually it's not going to go through. I think it's a crying shame that it's not, because it's giving the rights back that I believe people deserve, in terms of it's the same rights almost that you have when you're buying music. When you're buying music in a physical form, you're strapped on with a load of DRM. It doesn't work in that way. So I think it's good that it's being proposed. And I think, even though it probably won't go through, that's my prediction, I think it's really good in terms of just giving a little bit more backing to the whole point that people are just fed up of all this restrictions that they've got on what they do. I think, yes, it won't go through, but it shows that the people are serious. And if you can get congressmen or, again, whatever they're called, I'm afraid I'm not very much up on US politics, but if you can get people in this position to actually do it at an official level, then it just shows that they are representing their people, which is obviously good for their constituents or whatever you want to call them. And I just believe it's a very positive step. Now, obviously, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who, of course, were lobbying for something like this, have come in at full support, as was anticipated. And I think that it's just a really positive step. It shows that it's not just people moaning, and that actually there is some weight behind it. And I think it's good that we get people out there who are actually pushing for it. And, yep, probably won't go through, but hey, you know, maybe this is the step, maybe this is a turning point to getting people to actually take notice.
You know, one question I have to pose to you guys, and we'll start with Todd and go to Rob. Why do you think more people haven't been clamoring for this in the past? When I look at it, I tend to think just, you know, the average user, we're not average media users, I'm definitely going to put that out there, but the average user probably doesn't even realize it's illegal to do half these things, such as copy and the like. But what do you think needs to be done to get the to make the public more aware? And do you think that there will ever be a general outcry from the public to say, to not only hope for these rights, but demand and expect these rights, you know, for basic protection of one's investment?
Well, that's because, and I hope I don't offend anybody, the average American is a sheep, okay? They will follow the leader. They will go along with the flow. They will do what they're told, you know? They don't question things. That's the case with almost anything in this country. You know, like you said, a lot of people don't even know it's illegal to copy a CD or, share music on the internet or whatever we're talking about here. There are people like us who know what we're doing and will have an outcry or complain or try to do something about it. But the average American, and again, this is America I'm talking about here, not anywhere else in the world, they're a sheep. They don't care. And if they do care, they figure they can't do anything about it because they're only one person. And it's just, I don't see, you know, I would hope that Americans would wake up and smell the coffee, but I just don't see it happening. There's so many issues in this country. You know, I don't want to get into the whole political thing here, but there's so many issues in this country that, you know, we shouldn't even talk about. But people don't voice their opinions, and if they do, they do it and then never do it again. You know, it's the same thing with this. Sure, some people might get, you know, ticked off or, you know, fed up with it or upset. Even if they did complain or do something about it, they wouldn't keep doing it. It's just the same thing over and over again in this country, and I just don't see it happening, really.
I mean, I view that as more a bit of a rant than anything else, Todd. I think that back to the issue, it's not something that affects America. It's something that affects the world, really. I mean, sure, the DMCA may be based in the US, but I don't think this is so much the people being sheep. It's just people who may not be aware. Because if, for example, you come into this environment where you're used to just ripping CDs and you know, it not being quite right and not having the ability to rip their DVDs easily, it's not that they're being sheep and just thinking, well, I'd like to change the world, but really I'm not able to. That's not what's happening at all. It's just that people are not aware that actually they're not thinking about what you know, the way it could be. Could be done. And I think, well, I don't know, I don't think insulting the audience is probably the best way to go about this. I just think that it's a great positive move that this bill has been proposed. And I think it's great that it's been put out there. I don't think it's going to go through, but I do love the fact that it's been out there, and I do hope that it will be the start of a domino effect to starting to just get the discussion around. Then, I don't know, maybe just to get people talking. Maybe just as a PR move, it's actually a good thing. And, you know, yeah, people may be slightly ignorant of the issues, but I don't think we should sort of look down on them for that. I think it's more just the fact that people are happy to just get on with things because obviously that's all they can do. But this is a good positive step. I think it's a really, really important thing to happen. And, yeah, we'll just have to see what the outcome is and the ensuing media attention that goes along with it.
Yeah, I think, Rob, you hit the nail there. As far as attention goes, I think the media really needs to pick up on it. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what the media is like in the UK and the such, but in America, the media loves negativity. It's our crack, I guess, or our cocaine, and that's all they seem to focus on. I'm not sure this is going to catch the wave of media attention that it needs to really make the public aware that, well, there are limitations on their rights and that maybe we do need to stand up and fight for them. So, I hate to sound all patriotic here and all, or revolutionary, but what you people need to do is you need to find out who your local congressman is, and you need to write them. Just shoot them a brief email saying that you support the Freedom and Innovation Revitalizing U.S. Entrepreneurship Act of 2007. Write to them. Tell them you support the act. Tell them that you want these rights, and get your representatives on this. It's definitely a big issue. It's something that can really give or take a lot of rights away from you for something you already paid a lot of money for. But, yeah, when it comes down to it, the public needs to be made aware. I don't think it's that people are dumb or ignorant. I think it's that people maybe just don't pay attention. Maybe, you know, they've never been affected by it. To be honest, when I first joined the UN, this act was already in place, and I had very little idea about it. It was only through participation on the UN that I realized, holy cow, what the heck is going on here? It's illegal to do this? But it's a big step, and I hope it gets further than instant kill. I'm not sure it's going to get much further than that, but I just hope it gets a little support, at least to get people's attention. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, our topics of the week are done, and it's time for, get ready, I found a name for it. It's the most obvious name in the world, our picks of the week. I'm going to go first this week, since I never get to go first, and I'm going to choose my song of the week. It's from a rather unknown band named Egypt Central, and the song is actually the last song on their album. The album's name is Walls of Innocence. I'm sorry, not Walls of Innocence, it's Egypt Central. And the track title is Home. It's acoustic, it's an amazing sounding track. You're going to have a hard time tracking down the CD. It's only available in some places. I think Amazon may have it still. I'm not even sure, to be honest. But definitely check it out. If you like acoustic, mellow music, check out Egypt Central, Home. Rob, come on, man. Let's hear your code of the week.
Okay, we're going to start off with a bit of a scenario going on here. Okay, think back to when you were in school, guys. stick with it. So you're back in school, and you go to lunchtime, and you go to the canteen, cafe, or whatever your school called it, and you get some bizarre-looking mixture slopped on your plate, and you're not quite sure what it is. It purports to be meat, but you don't quite know. It's reconstituted crap. You don't know what's going on. And we have this concept on the web called mystery meat navigation. And this is basically where it happened in the early 90s and when the internet was first in its stage there, and now it's happening again a lot on flash sites, where instead of giving the user the full view of what their navigation system is, they sort of hide it behind graphics. So you might have to move your mouse over something like a little graphic, and then that will, as a rollover, change to text like "about us," and then you might have to go to a different area of a picture, and that will change to music or something like that. And I just think that this whole concept of mystery meat navigation, not letting your users know how to navigate through your site and expecting them just to play with your pretty design, it's an arrogant way of designing websites, and it's terrible on the usability front. So please, when you're designing sites, make sure that the usability is at the forefront, that the design comes second. Now, obviously, you need to do something to bridge the gap between the two, because it's very important to make a site that both looks stunning and is also great to use. But just make sure that in terms of navigation, people are not just waiting around and just have to scroll and move their mouse over to find some hidden hotspot that you found. It's not cool, it's not clever, and it's just a pain in the ass.
Thank you, Rob. I'm actually going to add a little to that and say that in my very basic design work, I've always gone in with the attitude of make it work, then make it pretty. So yeah, guys, usable designs. Listen to Rob. He definitely knows what he's talking about. And Todd, of course, we have to come to you. Dun, dun, dun. Your game of the week. What is it, man?
Well, you know, I've still been pretty busy this past week, so posting news has been on back burner again. But I do have to, for my game of the week, go with Jade Empire Special Edition, the PC version. Yes, finally, after like 2 years, BioWare has brought Jade Empire to the PC with upgraded textures, two new fighting styles, some other new stuff. Just very nice upgrade for the PC. It looks really stunning. It's available over Steam, by retail stores as usual. I think it might be on Direct to Drive from GameSpy, Foplon, or whatever their company that runs it. It's actually only right now, up until March 2nd, tomorrow, available in the U.S., South America, North America, and South America. Tomorrow is the rest of the world, I believe, launches in Europe and Asia, I believe. It's just a really great RPG from BioWare. It won a lot of awards when it came out a couple years ago. It was an original Xbox game, not an Xbox 360 game. It's just a really good game. It's fun. It's got a great story. Good dialogue. Really good voice acting. Graphics, like I said, were upgraded for the PC. They're really nicely done. Overall, the keyboard and mouse works great if you're worried about it, and it's just a really good game. So, Jade Empire Special Edition.
And you said that's available on Steam, Todd?
Yes, it was available for $35.95 a couple of days ago, but now that it launched, it's available on Steam for the full price of $39.95.
Not bad. I love that Steam platform. And before we go, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to thank one NeoWin member who had pity on me and for my stupidity of not knowing the obvious term of Pick of the Week. I want to thank Wyndam, W-I-N-D-A-M. He actually PM'd me with a suggestion of Random of the Week. It was a good suggestion. I obviously like my idea a little bit more, but I want to thank him for that. He had some pity on this. Well, I felt pretty stupid. I'll just put it that way. But that is the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen. We're done talking. You're hopefully done listening, otherwise you want to get checked out. Until next week, on behalf of Rob and Todd, have a good one.